Late beams and gentle beams and non-binary beeple, welcome back to another wonderful episode of Beamsketball. I'm Beam C, he's Rob Beam, and though the team has been away, the beam has been lit anyway. The Kings keep it rolling on their road trip with a small blip against the Heat, but winning against the Pacers and the Bulls. Rob Beam, how are you feeling about the team that's been on the road for what seems like so long?
A long time, but feeling real good. Light the beam. You know, you can see it all over the place. Just, you know, we're letting everybody know. Light the beam. You know, it feels so good. And I'm very proud of our folks for continuing to play so well over such a long stretch away from Golden One. It's actually a little bit surprising. I mean, it's a lot of marks up against them, and yet they're continuing to win. You know, not always the prettiest win, but they're continuing to win, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it's tough to win on the road. The Kings are doing it. Remember last season, the Kings led the Western Conference in road victories. It's a huge strength for them. This stat is a couple games old, but last season we were 8th in defensive rating on the road, despite being, you know, bottom 5 in the league or whatever. But and then, you know, going, I think after the Heat game, I believe was when the stat that I saw, we were 9th on the road.
That's pretty good
in defensive rating. Also up to 16th in the league in defensive rating.
Really now? Okay.
Unfortunately, our offensive rating is sitting at 14th, so the offense has got to get going on a more consistent basis. It feels like I may have said something to that nature before at some point on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's dig into this Miami Heat game, a game the Kings end up losing 115-106 down in South Beach. Keegan Murray, 33 points, lighting it up on the offense, getting it done on defense. Domantas Sabonis with a monstrous triple-double. And crickets. Mm-hmm. Everybody else.
Yeah. The crickets were not shooting tonight or that night, BMC. You couldn't account for anybody else. It just seemed like nobody else was showing up to play the game. But you know, I you have to say to tip your hat to Sabonis every night that he plays on the floor. You know, no matter how many points he's putting up, he's just always controlling the pace of the game. And offensive rebounds, obviously his defensive rebound stats are incredible. Just doing well. Appreciate seeing him continue to have a good night, even when they're, like you say, crickets from other folks. I mean, Kevin Huerter has had, I guess that night was not from three, wasn't wonderful, but I mean, he is putting up better minutes as of late. This last three games, I feel like his head's in the game a lot more. He's been going after those loose balls a lot more, and he did have 14 points here. It wasn't a remarkable 14 points, but then at the end of the game, you're like, yeah, I guess he did score pretty well. You know, I mean, he's 50% from the floor. It's pretty darn good. You know, but you're right, crickets from the bench, no help.
Yeah.
And when it was a non-Fox, non-Sabonis minutes, it was like, what's happening? And then I don't know what was wrong with Fox's shot. He was just not hitting lid on the basket, man.
Yeah, that was very rough to watch Fox struggle so much. I mean, you know, he has a halfway, you know, just a slightly below average game, and you probably come away with a victory.
Right.
But you're very right about Kevin Huerter. You know, I want to say it's more than just the last three games. The past several weeks, what's really impressed me is Kevin Huerter is really open to doing the dirty work now. Mm-hmm. He is working his butt off on defense to the point that it's kind of run Chris Duarte out of a rotation position.
Yeah, interesting.
And Huerter, and I love that he's got his shot back and he's aggressive. I like that he's aggressive even on nights he's not shooting. I like that the confidence is still there. You know, not that, you know, he got a little hot streak. He's had some games where it's been not so hot, especially against the Bulls. But, you know, the confidence is back in his game. But he's, yeah, you're right that he's playing well. He's rebounding well. He's contesting shots, especially from behind. He's very active on defense. I got to imagine that of almost any guy on the roster, Mike Brown's maybe the happiest with Kevin Huerter right now in terms of him performing. And because 14 points is that's about what you want. That's there. You know, you want more than 13 out of Fox is kind of where the drop off happened more in this game. And you had a Heat team that was due. I think, you know, they're on a 7-game losing streak, which remarkable stat here. That's the longest losing streak the Heat have had in 17 years.
Sure.
The
Spoelstra era. Riley,
Even longer than the Spoelstra era. Like even before, like when Pat Riley was coaching before Eric Spoelstra.
Sure.
But you know, Pat Riley has just done such a remarkable job with that organization. To be that kind of consistent, you know, that team was very motivated to get a win. And you know, it's bound to happen. You know, they're I know that they have struggled and dropped a lot in the standings because of this losing streak, but let's not pretend that they're a team that is as bad as, you know, Chicago or Brooklyn or Toronto or something like that. Like, no, they went to the NBA Finals last year.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that's why I don't feel super bad about this game, because I feel like we stunk. Like, that was a bad performance.
Still came pretty close.
And we lost by 9.
Yeah.
To a team that's very good. And Jimmy Butler has not been a very good 3-point shooter at all this season. And he hit a few this game. And, you know, with him, there were some shots that it's like, okay, well, you know what? You play the numbers and you take that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the first one he made that game was his 30th made three of the year. So you're not expecting him to come out and hit three of them. However, you maybe should expect a little more from Josh Richardson and prepare yourselves.
My God.
So let's take that into one of our favorite segments, something you love, something you hate, and something you want to debate. I'll say what I loved about this Miami Heat game was our on-ball defense. Guy had the ball. He was dribbling, trying to get in the paint. He did not get to where he wanted to go this game. Okay. I thought the Kings did a really good job with that. I was really impressed by that.
I like that.
On the flip side, what I hated was our off-ball defense, because we let everybody get wide open, and the Heat, every shot was a catch and shoot, because the Heat had 49 made field goals and 42 assists.
Wow. That's impressive.
So you're talking about guys, and they just got a lot of wide open looks because our off ball defense was no good.
Yeah.
We weren't letting guys dribble and score that way, but we were letting lots of guys get backdoor cuts. We were letting lots of guys get off on flare screens and get wide open for threes. I don't know. How many threes does Josh Richardson have to hit before you, maybe trying to put some pressure on there? I mean, I don't know, man. I'm just some Bean Basil with a podcast with an average listenership of maybe 2.1 people, but I feel like maybe you should put some pressure on a guy when he's hitting 3, 4, 5 threes in a game.
Yeah, man, he's lighting this up. Yeah, I totally agree. That's kind of how I was feeling. I was really loving our on-ball like pressure, you know, off inbound plays. Just in transition, I thought we were doing really well with our ball pressure, but then it would break down. Like you say, we would get into a spot on once we were set up in the half court, and we couldn't get any consistent stops. And that's what I hated. We just couldn't get a consistent stop, could not lock anybody down consistently. It was just like, it was not a free for all. Like, I don't, you know, it wasn't a blowout free for all. It was just, there were several opportunities in the third and fourth quarter where we could have gained the lead, kept the lead, and made it like a 10-point advantage going into the fourth or halfway through the fourth, and really made this a different kind of game. But what we just – we no consistent stops, could not figure out how to switch, or sweet switch too much. Like, it was just too much inconsistency.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that was, and yeah, like you, I agree with you. We could not go on that run that we needed to get ahead and win the game, because we couldn't get those stops. Because you can't go on a run without getting stops.
Exactly.
You can hit 5 threes in a row, but if they also, if even if they hit 5 twos in a row, like 15 to 10 is not much of a run.
Yeah, exactly. Or
15 to 4 is a run, which means they hit 2 shots and then they missed 3 at least.
Yeah,
now you've got to get stops. You're totally right. So yeah, it's that really prevented us from going on that run that we need. Yeah, because you're right. It seemed like we were knocking on the door a couple of times, and oh, maybe we're gonna flip it around here, but then it just couldn't ultimately get it done.
We'd get 7 points in a row, 8 points in a row, and then we'd give it all back. And like, good God, folks, come on, dig in.
Yeah, it's
but no.
It was a bummer, but yeah, you know what? We're not going to win them all. You know, you're not going to go 7-0 on a 7-game road trip. You can't ask that of anybody. We're 5-1 right now. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, damn
good. And I'd say you, at least of the 6 teams we've played so far, I would say the Heat are the best team.
Sure.
That we've played on this road trip.
Nah, it's true.
You know, I, you know, I mean, maybe Dallas, but
yeah, full strength Dallas. Yeah, we really should.
Yeah, okay, very fair point. Full strength Dallas would have been, but not Dallas without Kyrie.
Yeah, with not having to guard a second, you know, potential all-star, I think it allows us to do what we do to Doncic. A lot of doubling, or a lot of false doubles, or it gave the entire game for Keegan Murray just to be all over Doncic, whether he liked it or not. And I thought it was hilarious how much he just kept blocking him, and how upset he kept getting. I know we talked about the Mavericks game, but I'm still thinking about it, because Keegan's been doing that consistently, even these last 3 games. Like, he gets a tough assignment, and he's just in their back pocket. He's just sitting there waiting on them every damn game. I really appreciate his concerted effort to improve his one-on-one defense last few games here.
Yeah, I agree. He's really establishing himself as one of the better perimeter defenders in the league, not just on the Kings. Or in recent memory of the Kings, but he's a guy who is, you know, if I'm a player in the NBA, I don't want him to cover me, because he's got, thanks to all that work with Fox for the offseason, he's got that quickness to cover the guards, but he's 6'8".
Yeah, but he's 6'8". So, yeah.
So if you're a quick wing, he'll match you, and if you're a guard, he'll overmatch you.
Right,
with the height,
right.
So it's it's great to see. I love to see the Keegan's already taken on that challenge and doing well at it as a second year player.
Yeah, that's right. And I always forget he's a second year player. Oh my God, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. You know, you think about him 2 seasons from now, and
incredible.
You know, when Fox and Sabonis are at least as good as they are now, if not a little bit better. And Kevin Herter is in the, you know, kind of in that same boat with them. And, you know, you add another piece. And as long as Lyles and HB don't age out too quick, you know, things look really good for the future. So long as that future does not occur in Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
To bring us to our topic of debate today, so the Sacramento Kings are 5-31 in Miami, as the team playing in Sacramento. Chris Webber never even won in Miami. We won once while he was on the roster, but he did not play in that game. So, Robbie, what do you think the Kings did to cause this curse to happen to us?
You know, I mean, maybe we didn't carry the basketball up the hill and let the basketball drinks while we sang. Like, I'm not real sure, BMC. Like something happened here. How can you be 5-31? How can C Webb not have won in Miami? That's ridiculous. What's in the water? I don't understand.
I tell you what's in the water, but let's not get into that.
That's a public sort of health stuff. Crisis.
Yeah, that's a podcast. Exactly. Yeah, definitely not my domain. Maybe yours, but not mine. But okay, I like your theory. We did not carry the basketball up the mountain to drink and sing for it. Okay, that's a solid theory, right?
That's what I've got. I feel like there's no better explanation right now.
I was thinking it was more along the lines of, you know, one of our players, you know, somebody in our organization must have, you know, littered upon and maybe like a native basketball burial ground or something like
yes,
that.
Yes.
Sort of did something to upset somebody who could bring a curse upon us.
Yeah, some late basketball spirit.
You know, Vlade Divac stole a cigarette from the Wicked Witch of South Beach or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. And so she's punishing the rest of us for all time.
And we'll see. Yeah, yeah. My theory is just direct offense, but your theory is just abdication of duty.
Yes,
certainly could be one or the other. Who knows? If you have theories, email us at alanvancharles@gmail.com. He's our resident conspiracy theorist. Give Alan a ring and he'll get back to you within 7 to 431 business days. Any other thoughts on this unfortunate loss to the Miami Heat?
Oh, not a ton. I think I would venture to say that the one thing I would just emphasize that you said earlier was Fox with 24 points, and this is a totally different game. And I do feel like this was one. It was a loss, but it was not a I don't know. I didn't feel like that was a gut-wrenching loss, yeah, as opposed to some of the other losses this season. This one was like, oh, okay, you know, that we played pretty hard. There was some legitimate reasons why we didn't win here. Yeah. So I felt like I didn't feel like I was let down or something like that with this loss.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That was the thought I had. It's like, okay, Fox scored 13, he averages 27. If you cut that in half, this is a 2-point game, and so the last 30 seconds, minute of this game are different. So who knows? You know, you're right there. If Fox, like I said, you know, doesn't have an average game, a below average game, but just a little bit better. And, you know, same could be said for Malik Monk, too. He was, you know, continued to be in that funk. But other than that, kicking off to the Pacers game where Malik Monk has officially broken out of his Malik funk.
Yeah.
And I thought what was a real breakout game for the offense here, just a lot of guys going, being able to hit shots, and it felt good. I know he gave up a lot of points, but I thought this Pacers game, for the most part, we got it done. We came in and did what we need to do against an undermanned and tired team. I would have preferred when we got up 18 in the third quarter if we'd have been able to put that game away midway through the fourth and give Domas and Fox some rest.
Yeah, totally.
Unfortunately, that was not the case.
No.
But I thought our offense looked good. We were hitting shots. We were running around. We were pushing the ball, doing what we expect out of this team on offense. Yeah. Yeah. And then we were very, very aggressive on defense and got a whole hunk of steals. I think 15 as a team. De'Aaron Fox, 6 steals in this game, 11 deflections.
That's incredible.
Frame of reference, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander leads the league, and I believe it's 3.6 deflections a game.
Oh, my. Okay.
It's less than 4. I can tell you that. So yeah, and we forced the Pacers to commit 31 turnovers, and we took advantage of those for a lot of points, and that was really, I think, most of the difference in this game.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I mean, in addition to the fact that the Pacers had nobody who could even pretend to stop Domantas Sabonis, and he could just do whatever he wanted down low.
Yeah, that was helpful. I also thought the transition looked really clean. Like, well, there was a few transition plays where the ball never even touched the ground, and I was just mm-hmm. blown away by how clean some of our transition looked in this game.
Yeah, I noticed in this game and in the Bulls game, like, some guys are kind of leaking out more.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, they're like guys like Malik Monk and Kevin Herter are looking to I'm not anywhere near the rebound. I'm going to get downhill as fast as I can. And so even if it's an inbounds, Domas catches the ball and throws that.
Because he looks up right away.
You know, I mean, this is, of course, this happened in the Bulls game. But when Davion Mitchell had that one where Malik Monk took off and Davion Mitchell threw that amazing, like, 75-foot pass down the court right to Monk for that layup, that was
intense.
And they showed it on the replay, I was watching the Bulls broadcast, and they were talking about watching him going, oh, and there he goes, and he's gone, and we're ready to go. You know, I mean, that's one of the things I know I've heard a lot last season is like, you know, wow, this team scores with 21 or 20 seconds on the shot clock.
Sure.
with some regularity, and it's – and that's when we're at our best, I think.
Yeah, when we're moving that fast, yeah, I totally agree. And we even with moving that fast and, say, increasing our total turnovers by a couple, three, I still think it's better for the offense in its whole to for us to be moving at that sort of a pace. I think that even though it makes us a little bit more turnover prone, I am yet to see a team that can keep up with it.
Yeah, we're you know, it's playing to our advantages. We are fast. Let's play fast. Let's outrun teams, especially if that team is tired. That was pretty good. we did let Ben Mathurin slice us apart on defense. That was frustrating to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. My God. Now, I mean, he was coming back from like what, 2-3 games of rest. But still,
he had been hurt. So, you know, he's not having the same level of fatigue as his teammates. But, man, he just got to the basket with the ball and without the ball at will.
Oh, yeah.
He's a really good player.
Ball star out there.
He's a really good player. I would love to have him as our two guard of the future.
No doubt.
He's just in his second year. He's in that draft class with Keegan just a couple picks after, if I'm remembering right. He's a heck of a player, good defender, good shooter, very athletic. Good
outside shot, too. I mean, it was – it looked fluid when he lit us up. Yeah, I mean, it was nice. He looked good.
Yeah. Tyrese Haliburton did not lit us up.
No.
Our defense is good on him. I'm going to be real with you. I don't think he should be playing. He did not look
– wouldn't look ready.
Anywhere close to 100%.
Nah. Not at all. Wasn't looking and that was, fast. His shot definitely looked off. I don't know. And also, I thought that he was not pushing the ball ever when he had it in his hands, you know.
No, I mean, look at what just happened with Joel Embiid.
That's true.
I was watching that Warriors-Sixers game, and I was looking at it, and I caught the tail end of it with a buddy of ours, and we were both saying he just doesn't look like he should be playing right now. He's not. He's just looks tired. He's jogging at the court. I mean, you know, he was like 5 of 14 shooting that game. He was bad. They were getting beat. And it didn't look like he should be in. And then he got hurt. And it was, you know, just this, you know, dedication to trying to get to the 65-game minimum, you know, be an MVP or an all-NBA player in Tyrese's case. But it's just – and now, you know, who knows what kind of injury it's going to be for Embiid, if it's going to cause him to, you know, have no chance at even playing 65 games or not. And I just think the Pacers are playing the same stupid game.
Mm-hmm.
With Tyrese Haliburton, and I'm afraid they're going to win the same stupid prize.
Yeah, they're going to try. They're trying to win him an MVP nod, and it might cost him like more, way more than what they're losing on this season.
you know, because that turns into to a meniscus tear for Joel Embiid, then he's probably out for the year.
Right, right. And that would be best case with that. You know?
Who's coming back from a meniscus tear in 12 weeks?
No, bro. No.
Nobody.
Not
at full strength, that's for sure.
No way. Yeah, not when you've got a 290-pound frame. Like, not, you know what I mean? Like, you're not a lightweight dude. No way. And also, I mean, look how much jumping and how much just pure wear and tear goes on to their body already. Like, I can't imagine him coming back in 12 weeks from something like that. I mean, I really hope that it's not a tear. I hope he just bruised it or something, you know? But I mean, if it's any kind of a tear – I honestly think his best interest is just wait. Let it heal. Don't push this, you know. We've seen too many great players go out because they came back too early. They're pushing it too hard, you know.
Yeah, it's a bad situation. I don't want to see these guys, you know, miss long term.
No way. Then,
you know.
And I don't even like Joel Embiid that much, but I you know what I mean? But I don't want to see anybody hurt. That's not fun.
Yeah, it's no. The entire league suffers if guys are missing their best players.
Yeah,
you know, it's so nobody wants to see that. Anyways, back to Kings Pacers. One thing I wanted to point out was Kessler Edwards and his defense in this game, and that was fantastic. And I'm going to do that to transition us into a bit of I hope I'm right and I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm right, and then I think Kessler Edwards is figuring out a way into the rotation. And to come in and play impactful defense, you know, to get positive minutes and be a guy we can come in and harass another team's ball handler or elite wing. And I love that too. Yeah. This is great to see him come in and play meaningful minutes and get stops. You know, opportunity arises with the injury to Sasha Vasenkov. Hopefully he'll be back soon.
Right.
Sure. We could use his offensive firepower. Certainly, as Kessler Edwards is not expected to do anything on offense and is therefore not doing anything on offense. Really, I don't think he scored in either of the past two games, but he came in and he played good defense and it was worth playing him. It was positive minutes. And I want to see more of that. So I hope I'm right in that he's figuring it out.
Yeah, I hope you're right too. Yeah, I hope he is figuring it out. I hope that does work him into the lineup some more. You're absolutely right. He's been just excellent when he's in. I feel like Coach Brown been putting him in a lot situationally, but prior to these last three games, he was much more of a we need to lock down the last 30 seconds to a minute of this quarter, or you know we need to for sure get a stop here, you know, stuff like that. But I totally agree with you. I love to see that he's getting back. He's getting into the minutes. During the meat of the quarter, during the time where, okay, we are trying to make a run. And like we said before, part of that run is stopping them from scoring. And so I really like him in there helping us make the run by locking down their best player. And so it's nice to see that because it would be really interesting come playoff time to see if Murray goes out when he gets his rest. If Kessler Edwards could come in there and continue to lock down their best player, like that would be quite a luxury. If let's make some stuff up. Let's say that we're playing Dallas or something, and Keegan gets a couple of early fouls. It'd be real nice to be able to stick Kessler Edwards in there to lock down Doncic while you also bring in, say, Keon Ellis to play havoc, or Davion Mitchell to play havoc with Kyrie. Like, I really think it'd be an interesting secondary rotation to continue to lock them down and not lose a bunch of ground while you're in your second unit minutes.
Yeah. And I think part of it is also, you know, when I talk about the Pacers game and, you know, they're it being an offensive breakout game, you know, you got guys scoring, especially off the bench, you got Monk getting 22 points. Is when that's going on, you can afford to have Kessler Edwards on the floor and be a guy who's not looking to shoot, you know.
Sure.
When you come in and you need offense out of your bench and it's not coming out of Monk and Lyles, then it gets really hard to play Kessler Edwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pressure to put Sasha in or somebody else who might try to create some points, it, you know, increases. But when you have guys who are, you know, the starters and the bench who are getting it done, it allows you to bring in a guy like that to play defense. And in a similar note, like I'm impressed with what Davion Mitchell is doing and being able to contribute. You know, he's still not an offensive addition by any stretch, but you know, his defense is good and he is, well, he's not like a scoring threat very much. He's playing with a lot more pace recently.
Yeah,
he's much faster. And that seemed to have been the kind of the issue of why he was not getting the playing time before, but he's doing a much better job at just pushing the heck out of the ball and being aggressive with it, you know, with either passing or driving to the basket. He's not that bad of a finisher, actually.
Right, right. Yeah.
Surprising with that.
He's pretty good. And at full speed, like he's starting to get that full speed layup down pretty well. And that's a really tough skill to master. And so I'm really interested to see him continue to do stuff like that. I mean, he's had a couple of great defensive stands in recent history here. And so it's nice to see him couple that with another tool in his offensive game where he can beat people down the court, really speed them out of the gym and get a nice layup. You know, it's really nice to see that, especially as an undersized guard.
So yeah,
I like that.
I like it that they're getting their minutes and they're doing well with them. Flip it on the other side. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that free throw shooting is going to lose us a game in the playoffs, if not a series.
No, I hear you. I hope you're wrong too, because it really does seem to be something that is plaguing us, and fairly consistently. I mean, obviously, it's lost us a couple of games already. I think you're absolutely right. Come playoff time, where we're crunching for points, and every single possession matters. I think that other teams are going to watch some film and be like, you know what? We're in the fourth quarter. Foul them. They don't make their free throws and down the stretch. Make them make their free throws. If I was watching the scouting reports on us, that's what I'd be thinking. You know, if I was sitting in a film room going, well, shoot, how did they lose those very close games? Well, they didn't hit five of their last eight free throws. Oh, okay. You know what I mean? So I totally agree with you. I think that that's a thing that could lose us some games, if not a series. You know, I hope you're wrong. But I do think you have a good point there.
Yeah, it's I mean, 18 of 28 in that game, you know, that's it's just wild how bad it is. You know, we're worst in the league. You know, Fox and Domas are doing the heavy lifting on that. Malik Monk has been started to get very questionable from the line. Team did well against the Bulls, though. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. Free throw shooting was better that game. But, it's – I agree with you. You do the math and you think maybe instead of letting De'Aaron Fox attack the basket and get what he's going to get because he's De'Aaron Fox, just center the free throw line and see if he can actually make two free throws. You know, it's a problem for this team.
It is. It's a problem that is very, I think, really visible. If there's any problems with this team, it's not making our free throws, and we're turning the ball over too damn much. You know, I feel like, I mean, a lot of teams turn the ball over a lot, but our live ball turnovers are killing us, and not making our free throws down the stretch is killing us. So, yeah, I hope you're wrong. You know, I appreciate you're looking so forward. The thing I was hoping I was wrong about is just strictly was more based on the game of the Pacers. Like, I just feel like if Halliburton plays well or Miles Turner plays at all, we have a really tough time beating this team because we were not getting stops. We were outgunning them a lot. And I don't know that we would be able to play the same game or have, or like for DeMontis' sake, like him having the same dominance with Miles Turner in there. Not that Turner's like, you know, the biggest dude, but he's definitely a shot blocker. And so I think having either one of them, either Halliburton play better or Miles Turner play at all, I don't know if we beat them. And I hope I'm wrong about that, because I think there's a lot of other teams that fit the bill of the Pacers. They can play as fast as we do. They've got some pretty decent players, some semi-all-stars. And if we kind of do what we were just saying, don't make our free throws, you know, aren't taking it seriously come down the stretch, like we will end up losing some games, if not a series, because of those bad habits. So anyway, that's, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we get over this, and I hope that in some of these signs that we're seeing with like this Pacers game, we may be able to overcome still. There's still time left in the season to get our mind right here for the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, you know, we have not gotten a real look at the Pacers at full strength. I mean, they were really undermanned, and then we just, you know, laid a giant egg the first game. You're right, like, it's Sabonis doesn't get a game where he just gets whatever he wants when Miles Turner is there. You know, Miles Turner's at least a decent defender, if not a pretty good one. So yeah, it's a different game there. Full strength Pacers team, you shoot 18 of 28 from the free throw line, you're probably losing.
Yeah.
All things considered. And yeah, we got some, I mean, we got stops in the second and third quarter, but we didn't get any in the first quarter, and we didn't hardly get any in the fourth quarter up until the very end.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't until the last 3 or 4 minutes when we finally decided to really put the game away.
We should keep playing. Right. Nobody turned the Xbox off.
Yeah, and speaking of giving up big leads, let's talk about the Bulls game. That was pretty close to being a total disaster there for a minute, but thankfully De'Aaron Fox showed up in the clutch, finally got the calls that he's been begging for all year. Kings had a 30-point lead that they once let get all the way down to 3.
Yeah, I was crying.
Getting ready to be real, real angry about this game.
Yeah, I was very much prepared to be upset.
But we got a win, so it begs the question. I mean, is it just win, baby? Is a win a win? Are you pissed about this one still? Are you feeling good about it? You know, it's...
I still think it's... For me, I'm feeling very much like, okay, light the beam. Let's say that. Light the beam. But then also, like, we should reflect very quickly on how do you lose a 30-point lead, friends? I guess it's two things. How did you make the lead? Well, you played really good defense. You were shooting the lights out in the first half. Even to open up the second half, the first just shy of 3 minutes of the third quarter was impeccable. Like, we were shooting the lights out. They could not get a clean look at anything. And then they called timeout. And we came back out off that timeout, and we didn't play well at all for the rest of the entire third quarter.
Pretty much. It was...
I just like, who are you? What are you doing? And then there was definitely, I think it was with, I don't know, 6 minutes, something like that, left in the third quarter. Maybe it's 3 minutes. I was literally standing up in the living room, like waving my arms, going, please call a timeout. Like, how many more possessions are going to go by? We're just sitting there. I'm like, you got to call a timeout. We are losing our butts. Please. We need a stoppage. I was hoping that we'd get a commercial timeout just out of mercy. Please, doesn't somebody want to advertise right now? Like, we need to put our heads together. But no, we're gonna let it go all the way down to 9 points. And now, you know what happened? We got saved by the bell.
It was now time for the fourth quarter. I couldn't believe it.
All right. And then we had that good stretch in the fourth quarter. You know, the Bulls scored the first basket, and then the Kings went a 12-4 run, got it back to 103-87, you know, and then he stopped doing what works. I mean, and look, I want to give this team a bit of a break. You know, second night of a back-to-back,
right.
Sixth game of a seven-game road trip. Like, you know, like I said, the shots that were falling in the first half weren't falling in the second half. Because a lot of that's fatigue. And we fouled DeMar DeRozan way too much. And and that's what happens on a second night of back-to-back, because your game's tired. I'm not really miffed at the players very much. Sure. I'm quite a bit more miffed at Mike Brown's timeout calling or lack thereof and trying to get a control of this lead. And then it was 3:01 left. We were up by seven and there's a dead ball and we had three timeouts. We could have called a timeout that we were going to lose in a second. And I couldn't believe not calling that to give your guys some extra rest.
Right. You know, just tired. Rest.
How are you leaving timeouts on the board in a game where you're turning your 30-point lead into a 3-point lead.
I could not believe it.
It made no sense to me. I just watched the game. I get trying to let the players figure it out, but come on, man. Yeah. Like,
even if they're tired, even if you say, I want them to figure it out by themselves, you're still the one that calls the timeout. You be like, timeout. Okay, guys, I want the five of you to talk it out. I am not going to say anything. That's fine. But you still got to call the timeout. Like, they're not getting, they can't all huddle up in at center court out there and be like, okay, guys, you just stand there with the ball real quick while we figure out why you're beating us so badly. That's not how it goes. Like, it was driving me wild, man. I just couldn't believe that there was no timeout.
That was frustrating. Like I said, I'm not the players, you know, they did okay. A win is a win, you know, it goes in the win column. And you know, I'm just kind of zooming out and I'm looking at this team. Okay, before we zoom out, whatever it takes for Alex Caruso, go get him. I will drive to Chicago myself, bring him here.
I'll be happy to roll out the red carpet myself.
He terrorized us on defense.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, and he got a couple fouls on Fox there at the end that, you know, were a couple inches away from just being fantastic defense.
Yeah.
You know, the pressure he provides, you know, he's Davion, but he's 6'5" instead of 6', and it makes such a big difference.
It sure does.
I want him in a Kings uniform very badly. Absolutely. But yeah, like I said, okay, zooming out, I'm just looking at it, I'm going, okay, you know what? Yeah, it was, a win on a second night of a back-to-back. That's a good thing no matter what. You won both of the back-to-back games. That's really good. Zoom out a little bit more. You're 5-1 so far, 6 games into your 7-game road trip. That's pretty crazy. Zoom out a little bit more. You've won 6 of your last 7 games. Zoom out a little bit more. You're 10 games over 500.
That's pretty good.
On February 3rd, when last year you didn't do that until February 26th.
Okay.
It was not until post All-Star break to do that. And here's the thing. We are picking apart these wins with all these issues and all these things that we're not doing right, but we're still winning games.
Yeah.
To me, I just have this hope where I'm like, well, okay, what about the games where we figure it out?
Right.
Like can we get there this year? I don't know.
Basketball.
That's the very big question. We can do 2 quarters almost every game and 3 quarters in a lot of games, but we're always seeming to have at least one real bad quarter.
Yeah.
So
we're super cold on offense or we just cannot get a stop. But one quarter.
But that's still got us at 29-19 in the 5 seed. And okay, let's get in. Let's thank our friends over at TNR Landscaping for their loyal support of our podcast. We're going to get into our segment, Hedging Our Bets, sponsored by TNR Landscaping, Placer County's leader in landscaping and manscaping since 2009. Brought to you. They're bringing us Hedging Our Bets. I don't think the Kings are out of the hunt for the number one seed just yet.
Okay, fair enough.
Things can get just because if you just look at the upcoming schedule, you look at the tiebreaker situations with teams. If the Kings win the majority of their games that they've got, you got the Cavaliers, you got the Pistons, you got the Nuggets, and then you got OKC. You got the Suns, and then you got the Nuggets again. Wins in these games, especially in those last four, you would be gaining ground and potentially securing tiebreakers against the teams up there. So, you know, when we check in 2 weeks from now, the Kings could – now, to be fair, if things go south, the Kings could very much solidify themselves as out of the hunt for the number one seed. Sure. 2 weeks from now. However, they could be knocking on the door with the force of a policeman going into the All-Star break, potentially. You have a chance. If you win those last four games, you are talking about owning the tiebreakers against two of the four teams ahead of you with a chance to secure it against Denver in the week after the All-Star break. And you'd be right there with them.
Right.
You'd be right there behind those teams. And things would get real, real interesting, you know? So don't quite give up on your dreams for a number one seed in the West just yet, everybody.
I would say
you got a couple more weeks where we can have some hope and things can get real interesting. We'll see from there. What about you, Robbie? How are you going to hedge your bet today?
Well, you know, I think I bet that we're starting to see some of the playoff formations that Mike Brown's going to keep it when we start playing for real, so to speak. I think we're starting to see some of it. We've seen a few of consistent rotations now in the first quarter and in the fourth quarter. And then second and third quarter, he seems to still be kind of messing around, trying to see what he's going to like, seeing what's going to happen. But I want, you know, when you watch the fourth quarter, you can see some of his money options, his offensive minded lineups. And then I think that there's a lot of experimentation, like in mid game when Kessler Edwards is playing, like all that. I think that's a lot of experimenting. I think he's trying to figure out again. You know, lineup changes depending on the opponent. But I think irrespective of opponent, he's got a couple now lineups that he really likes. And so I think I would bet that we're starting to see some of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It does make like we're getting a little more consistency out of it. I hope you're wrong in a little bit sense on that, just in that I – want JaVale McGee to stop getting minutes because he's just not playing well.
Yeah.
And sure. I what is it that Alex Len has to do to get playing time? When he came in after JaVale got hurt, he played really well.
He did.
He got pulled for no reason just because JaVale was healthy. And then JaVale has not played well most of the time since then. But that is – I don't understand why the door isn't opened back up for Alex Len.
Yeah, that's very fair. I don't know.
JaVale McGee is a better alley-ooper than Alex Len. I don't understand what else he's better at.
Yeah.
On a basketball court.
Other than
court
that,
at this point.
Yeah.
He's got a higher vertical, but I don't really think anything else. Like, it's not as if Alex Len isn't a shot blocker and he's a good rebounder. He's a smarter player. He's in the right position more often. And I don't get it. I just don't get it why he's not playing over JaVale at this point.
That's a good question.
Like, I just say, bring JaVale in, and then he gives you seven awful minutes, and then it's just like, well, why are we going to do that again the next game?
Yeah, wait a minute. Why are we doing that again? Especially when a lot of other folks have such a short leash.
Right, yeah. It's just, at a time where it seems like everybody else is, yeah, their leash is getting tightened, the rotation is going up, it seems like it's weird that now is the time to allow for mistakes on JaVale's end.
Right, especially from a quote veteran, you know.
So he's got to start playing better, or Mike Brown's got to take him out and put Alex Len in.
Please, something,
or play more Trey Lyles at five.
Yeah,
you know, they did that against the Pacers, which I know was, you know, was more because the Pacers only had one center available in Isaiah Jackson, and so when they were playing Obi Toppin, it just made a lot more sense to have Trey Lyles in there.
Sure.
But I'm still a big fan of the Trey Lyles at the five lineups, especially.
Yeah.
Especially if he's gonna shoot as well as he did in this game against the Bulls.
Yeah, he was torching them.
That was just electric. In that game. All right. Any final thoughts on the three games this week before we take a look at next week's schedule?
Not a ton. Just plug again, you know, if anybody's out there listening to us, it's going to put a new player on the Kings. Caruso, please.
Yes, we are Caruso. Caruso Mento.
Yeah, like that.
Sacarusto. Yeah, bring him here. All right, looking ahead, next week. So on Monday, we have the final game of this seven-game road trip against the red-hot Cleveland Cavaliers. Obviously, on paper, this appears to be a nightmare matchup for the Kings with Cleveland's size. However, we were not afraid of them and ran right through them and played really, really well when we played Cleveland earlier this year. I was one of our more impressive performances, especially from a mental standpoint. I remember talking about it with you and talking about it on the podcast and just talking about, man, this felt good. This was mental toughness right here. This team was, we weren't afraid. And I was really proud of that. So we'll see if that's the case again. Like I said, the Cavs, they've won five in a row. They've won nine of their last 10. They're flying up the standings in the Eastern Conference. They've overtaken the 76ers. And it's the seventh game of a seven-game road trip for the Kings.
Sure.
So it's a tough, tough test. Hopefully we could come out with a win. But I wouldn't be terribly surprised or disappointed to not do so. What about you, Robbie? And what are your thoughts on this Cavs game?
I think you're right. I think the length bothers us. Absolutely. Paper doesn't look good, but I think you're right. I think we have some secret sauce for them. I don't know why, but we really seem to pull it out. I hope that Sabonis does have a good game against them like he did before. I think it's key for us in this game as far as spacing. With this team, it's if we're spacing well and Harrison Beams is popping off, you know, we have a decent chance of winning against the Cavs.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have a chance. Yeah, based off how we played last game against them. Yeah, obviously if we're gonna go hit 17 or 18 threes, we're gonna have a shot. But yeah, we'll see. It's a tough test. The Cavs are playing great basketball.
Yeah,
absolutely. Right now. But hey, I would argue so are the Kings. You got two very hot teams.
Yeah.
Coming into it. So we'll have to see there. After that, on Wednesday, we have a home game against the Detroit Pistons. Please just kick their butts from the beginning and continue to kick their butts for 48 minutes.
Yeah, let's not please do what we did last time when we're like, let's give them some hope.
Let's not give up a 50-point first quarter. Let's not get down by 20 before we decide to wake up and play against them. Let's come out and just get the job done from the get-go. Let Kobe Jones get to play 15 minutes. You know, let your guys let your guys get to have fun on the bench. It'll be a fun game with the young guys play. Let Sasha get a, if he's healthy, maybe he can get some, he can get a run in and be able to get up a bunch of shots and get in a rhythm, you know, shake off the rust from missing the last couple weeks with that ankle injury. It'd be a good opportunity for him to, you know, not have the pressure of needing to make a lot, but say, go out there and go take eight threes, you know, in the next 12 minutes. Like, let's get your shot going, get you going good. And if you lose that game, you know, you're going to get booed. People might throw beer at you through the walking through the tunnel. Like, yeah, that'd be completely ridiculously inexcusable. I mean, it's almost inexcusable when we beat them the last time by 25, because we got down by 20 to start.
Right.
Like that. So yeah, just kick their butts. They're a horrendous basketball team. You're a good basketball team. Play like that.
Good. Yeah, please. Yeah.
And then we'll have a home game against the Nuggets.
Yeah.
The Nuggets are basically at full strength now, injury wise. I mean, Vlatko Kankar has, you know, not made an appearance this season, and looks like he may not, but you know, they're back. MPJ is playing, Jamal Murray's playing, Jokic is playing, Aaron Gordon's playing, KCP's playing. You know, they're still the Nuggets. They won the championship last year. You know, they don't have Bruce Brown, but they're pretty good. Saving grace for the Kings is that this is a second night of a back-to-back for the Nuggets.
Yay.
And it's not for the Kings. And this is a huge opportunity for a huge win, I think.
Sure.
This is the last home game before the All-Star break. You're going on a three-game road trip after this to finish out before the break, and I think you get a home game against the Spurs in the first game after. But it's your last chance to get to play in Sacramento before the All-Star break. You're going to have a tired Nuggets team. You could beat a Nuggets team, so you could gain a game on the Nuggets in the standing, and you would be up 2-0 on the Nuggets in the head-to-head tiebreaker, with a chance to win that in the last game before the All-Star break about a week from then. So
strong.
You know, the Cavs game, I'm just kind of looking at it, I'm like, all right, you know, if we win, that's great. If we lose, kind of whatever. Pistons game, if we lose, I'm not just going to cancel this podcast. I'm going to cancel every podcast.
I'm going to cancel the team. We're just going to
cancel. I'm going to cancel the concept of podcasting entirely. but then that Nuggets game, it'll feel like a letdown if we lose, just because I think there's so much to gain.
Right. We have a good chance, too.
It'd be really big. And like I said, you win that game, and then you set yourself up with the week after that, have an opportunity to really start making a run at a top seed.
That'd be nice.
And, you know, home court advantage is important.
Right.
You know?
Definitely.
And I think avoiding a first or second round series with the Clippers would be nice.
That'd be real cool.
I think if you can end up as, you know, 1 or 4 and the Clippers can be 2 or 3 or somehow vice versa, like, you figure that out, that's great.
Yeah, let's all win a playoff series.
You know, that'd be pretty good. But, you know, it's an opportunity for the Kings to really make some noise. Like I said, we don't feel like this team is playing up to its potential, and yet it's still in a really good position.
Right.
So that's giving me hope. That's making me feel pretty positive about this team going forward. And so we'll have to see what happens in the next couple of weeks before the All-Star break. Speaking of All-Stars, I just want to mention, it is not even – words fail to
express
how much of an absolute ridiculous, like you just said, joke it is, that Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox on All-Stars, in particular Domantas Sabonis. I just want people to get it through their heads how stupid this is. He leads the league in triple-doubles.
Yeah,
apparently that doesn't matter. He leads the league in rebounding. Apparently that doesn't matter. He's 7th in assists as a center. That doesn't matter. He's like 6th or 7th in field goal percentage. Doesn't matter. He had 7 triple-doubles, 15 double-doubles on 23 points, 14.5 rebounds, and 9 assists per game, and shot over 71% from 3 in the month of January.
My God.
And he's not
an all-star? Please, you tell me, Robbie. What does he have to do? Does he have to go put up 50, 40, 30, 20, and 10 right? in a game?
Does he
need to score 100?
Honestly.
For God's sake, he's seventh on NBA.com's MVP ladder. By that logic, he should be a starter.
Right? It's unreal.
He's a top 10 player in the league. NBA is, but these idiots who coach and vote on this, if it's not completely rigged and through some other force
by the league,
it's so ridiculous. And then the under 500 or maybe a game over 500 9 seed Lakers get a second all-star, and Carl Anthony Towns, who isn't like a top 20 in anything,
right,
gets to be an all-star. He's not even the second best player on the Timberwolves, because I think Rudy Gobert should get in over him anyways,
right?
But it's just, and then and similarly, okay, De'Aaron Fox is the first player ever to average 27 points and 5 assists on a team that was over 500 and not make the All-Star game.
Right?
Okay, quit giving legacy seats to guys who aren't performing well. He's putting up the exact same numbers as Stephen Curry, and Stephen Curry's team is like 6 games below 500 and just lost to the freaking Hawks.
Right. Right. Like, that's what, but you're absolutely right. It's legacy seats. It's
Let's talk about empty calories, okay? Yes, the Warriors are talking empty calories. Steph Curry, 60 points, and the Warriors still lose. How's that for empty calories?
Straight up, man. I mean, if Steph really wants to get another ring, he needs to trim the fat and get the hell away from the rest of that.
He needs to demand a trade for the betterment of Steph Curry, the rest of Steph Curry's career. They need to trade him, and just like the Lakers need to trade LeBron.
Right. They need to cut him loose and let him go get a ring somewhere else, because it didn't happen in there. Not with street clothes and all the other garbage that they've got on that team. It's just not.
No.
Like, I'm surprised they're above 500, honestly.
I mean, you know, it's dumb as all hell. I want to mention the fact that the NBA announcers that I've heard throughout the league, I managed to hear the away team broadcasts all of this week.
Good.
So the Heat announcers called Domantas Sabonis the most underrated player in the league. They were showing him some respect and said they expected him to be an all-star. The Pacers announcers were flabbergasted that we had no all-stars.
Yeah,
they were just shocked. The Bulls announcers were straight up upset about it.
Oh,
they said the words blatant disrespect.
Wow.
In reference to us being a five seed in the West with how well Fox and Sabonis are playing and to not have any all-stars. They said they were mad about it. I really appreciated hearing that from them. So shout out to the announcement teams for the Bulls, the Pacers, and the Heat. You guys have clearly you understand the game of basketball, and that's refreshing. Yeah. And it's nice, because very few people have any idea what goes on in Sacramento, but it's clear that you guys have some concept. Now, I did see so that was Sabonis' fourth triple-double against the Bulls, which is second all-time in Bulls history. Only Jason Kidd and Russell Westbrook have done it more. Oh, they each have five triple-doubles against the Bulls, so I guess they're familiar with it. You know, they know what's going on. It's obvious that it's so ridiculous for these decisions to have been made. They're utter nonsense, and
I have no reason to watch.
And if your argument is, well, Fox isn't better than Curry, Sabonis isn't better than AD, then why not pick All-Stars on opening night?
Hey, why not play the games? Honestly,
if it's just talented, why not just open up 2K on your Xbox and pick the 24 highest-rated players, and then they're the All-Stars, and that's what decides it then?
Exactly.
Sabonis just put it 20-13-8. Do you know how many other players have ever averaged that before, Robbie?
What, one? One other one? One.
Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So you're putting up Wilt Chamberlain numbers, and then you're not an all-star? Mother beaming, kidding me?
Right? Oh, my God.
This is stupid. This is absolute buffoonery of the highest order. How in the world are these the people who get paid to coach in the NBA?
right? Yeah, and they're supposed to know something about basketball. How do you just forget about Sabonis?
It's maddening, but here's what's good about it is Fox and Sabonis are clearly pissed off about it, and they're playing in kind. Sabonis comes out on the triple-double and then almost triple-double and just, you know, dominates against Pacers, gets the triple-double against the Bulls. Fox comes out and gets 6 steals, 11 deflects against Pacers, gets 41 points and 5 steals against the Bulls. Like, the chip on their shoulder is heavy, and they are ready to respond. And I want that to really continue. If that can hold between now and up to the All-Star break, oh boy, it'll be good. And then what will be good, if they're not selected and they don't get an injury replacement, they get to rest. They can spend time with their young children. Happy birthday to Rain Fox, turned one today. Inspired a lot of Fox's performance tonight, I'm sure. And, you know, Domas has got his little baby tiger. And so that, you know, shout out to them and get some time with your family, get some rest, get healthy, get your legs back, maybe shoot some free throws. get a couple hundred free throws up a day, hopefully. And then come ready to make some noise after the All-Star break. We'll see. Any final thoughts from you, Robbie, before we wrap this episode up?
No, I'm feeling good, BMC. Another good week in the books.
Feeling good. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. It's a lot more fun to enjoy these Kings wins with you than commiserate in the Kings losses. So let's hope that continues. Light the beam, stay safe, and thank you. All righty. We did it.
Yay, light the beam.
we need jingles. We need jingles.